It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. This episode and every weekly podcast is presented by our friends over Exterior Home Solutions. Been local and trusted since 1999. And if you have a need for roofing, siding, a garage, whatever the case may be, contact Exterior Home Solutions today at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot of questions here today, so we'll work through as many as we can. We'll start with BC Lion 06. Who do you guys think will have a great chance at contributing next season that's in the signing class from yesterday?
Man, that's a great question. If they get David Sanders across the finish line, he would be one. Just because of position of need. And I think he's built to be ready. I think one of those linebackers, whether it's Harmon, or Ains, somebody's going to surprise, maybe one of the tight ends. I don't know if both of them will, but I think, Jack Van Dorsler is probably more ready than Brame right now physically to walk in the door and play. Brame, tremendous upside, but he's going to need to put on some weight. And then now I wonder about a guy like DeJuan Morris, Hubs. I mean, it just makes plays, and there's something to be said for that. Kind of what does Tennessee's running back room look like next year? And, how do they kind of feature him if he's able to, get on the field?
Yeah, I wonder about a guy like Marion Dye.
Yeah.
Does Dye factor, because you go rotating, you rotate pretty heavily at that position. What does that room look like? What do they look like there? Is there a chance that he could be a specialty type player? We saw Joseph's and Pierce played some as a freshman, but Joseph's played a significant amount as a freshman. Now, they didn't have near as much depth then as they do now, but I wonder about, if he shows any ability to get to the quarterback, if that's not someone who would have a chance to could potentially contribute beyond just special teams in year number one.
And especially, yeah. I mean, the two guys you just mentioned, I mean, who's are they back? I mean, I wouldn't right. Pierce isn't going to be back, but I mean, what's Joseph's stock look like? I mean, that would certainly influence Dye's chances.
We'll go to Jackson Ball 24. If we're the away team in the playoff, will we treat it like a bowl prep or a normal away game in terms of traveling for several days in advance or coming up the night before? Didn't know if there were, media obligations like they do with normal bowl games.
I think the first game will be treated like a regular road game. You'd fly up on a Friday, play the game on Saturday, fly back after the game. After that, then you get into actual bowls. If Tennessee is in the 8-9 and Oregon's the 1, it would be, Tennessee going to the Rose Bowl if they were able to get past whoever they play. And at that point, then, yes, you are going out there for some of those bowl obligations.
Now, was he asking about the team or about your golf plans, AP? Like, if that'd be a
– Well – I'm not going to jinx anything, so I'm just not going to talk about it.
First round games on campus facilities will be just regular road games. Is how they will go. Then it changes after that. AP is exactly right.
Barry the Vol says, with the elimination of the national letter of intent, what exactly did recruits sign on Wednesday?
It's a scholarship paper. It's a scholarship agreement. It has much of the similar language as the national letter of intent. It's not as hardcore binding because of the transfer portal that you deal with now, but it's
nothing binding.
Right. It's a scholarship paper that has a lot of the same verbiage that you have in the national letter of intent in it. Is basically what it boils down to. What's interesting is, and in every sport's different, but I mean, in the world of football, you can enroll at midterm and you could leave in April without any issue. You can go through 15 days of practice and say, hey, this is not for me and I'm out of here. Now, basketball, that doesn't work that way because the portal window is different in basketball from a timing standpoint. But if you're a midterm enrollee in football, you got all kinds of flexibility. So that's just the world we're in right now.
The A-Dog wants to know thoughts on Tennessee's strategy for non-conference opponents going forward, seeing how the committee ranked teams this cycle.
I'd be bringing Carson Newman in, EC, next year. I mean, seriously.
Like, in terms of cupcake games, but then the season ticket holders, and I think there's actually a question about this in here later on, at some point with rev share and talent fees and all that type of stuff, your season ticket holders are just like, And we're tired of seeing UTC, Kent State, and you know, barely anything at home, right?
They're tired of taking blood pressure pills too. You know, every Tuesday night at 7, you know, when the rankings come out.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what's more important for you? You know, that you're in the playoff, or that you played a couple of really hard, you know, fun loving, you know, home and homes with somebody, or a neutral site game with. I mean, do you think Tennessee fans are in love with the fact they're going to open with Syracuse next year in Atlanta? For I mean, when you talk about from a playoff standpoint, that game's not going to give you any. It's not going to give you anything. I mean, heck, Miami lost at Syracuse and cost them the playoff. Now that's a conference game for them, but I mean, I think that's one of the byproducts that's going to be really interesting to watch, and it's going to be hard to decide what to do if you're an AD, in my opinion. You guys may disagree, but you're scheduling so far out. Right now, based on what we've just seen this year, playing those type games, I mean, Clemson would be in much better shape if they'd have played Wofford than Georgia to start the season.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if you're an AD, are you scheduling those? But what do you think the committee and what do you think this thing's going to look like 5 years from now, 6 years from now, when you actually get to that game? I think that's an interesting part of it that is challenging for ADs when you try to figure out how to schedule.
Yeah, if you're Clemson and you scheduled Wofford and Appalachian State instead of Clemson and Georgia, or instead of South Carolina and Georgia, like how much better are you right now? I mean, you're a one-loss team. You're probably in the top five. You're in regardless of your deal. I mean, so yeah, I mean, like the question becomes, does the SEC just say, you know, scrap the 8+1 power four rule, just play the 8 and whoever the heck you want to play? Because if that happens, then Florida State's gone, Kentucky Louisville's gone, Clemson South Carolina's gone. You start losing a bunch of those kind of interstate matchups that, you know, involve two different conferences, even though they're two teams from the same state.
Don't you think you get some of that silly state, you know, politics stuff that would make them play?
Maybe. I don't know, man.
I'm not saying you would or wouldn't. I mean, some cases.
Kentucky's ever going to snap the playoffs, so I don't think that really matters.
Yeah, you're right about that one. But I mean, I'm just going on the empirical evidence that you have now, especially if you're an SEC AD, you're nuts to schedule LSU in the Jerry Dome.
I mean,
USC in the Jerry Dome or whatever.
Did somebody at some point last Friday night in Athens, Georgia go, what the hell are we doing playing Georgia Tech in about overtime four? Like, what's the benefit of us playing this game? I mean, that probably crossed some administrator's mind at that point in the deal, because if you lose that one, where are you from a playoff standpoint if you're Georgia? You know what I mean? And what, I mean, what's the bragging rights to beating Georgia Tech if you're Georgia? What, you know, I think those are all things everybody's trying to figure out right now of how do you get into the pool, right? What do you got to do to get into the pool in December? What's the best avenue to do that? I think that's what every conference commissioner and every AD is looking at right now.
All I know is we pulled out of Oak Ridge High School about 10:15 Eastern. That first overtime hit, it carried us all the way to the Marriott down there in Nashville at the airport. That game
it about did.
Ever.
I hate that new rule, by the way. Don't talk to me about 8 overtimes. That's a total crapshoot of one play. I mean, like, after the second overtime, I hate when they're talking about 8 overtimes. This is almost the second longest game in history behind Penn State and Illinois.
It's the 8th play, and then you have to take 2 minutes off. I mean, I think the NFL's got it right. I mean, I don't understand why college football, with the way they're doing it now, with 10 minutes, both teams get the ball. Unless you score a touchdown, it might be longer than if.
I would tell you that I think the NFL does it right to a degree, but I don't. I just think if a team scores a touchdown, Rob, I think they should be the other team should still have a chance to score another touchdown.
I don't disagree. Disagree with that. Maybe saying they're right is too strong. It's better than what college is.
Yeah, 100%. There you go.
It's better than the sudden death field goal from what it was a couple of years ago.
Yes,
that's for sure. All right, 731_V4L wants to know, Austin, can you go through the top in-state 2026 kids and tell us who Tennessee might be heavily involved with? Of course, you've already got two that are committed right now in Snead and King.
I mean, Craig Tutt's another big one that Tennessee really wants to be in on. Tyreek King. We'll see if Tennessee, circles back around to Shavar Young. What do they do down in Chattanooga? You got some kids at Baylor and McCauley that Tennessee likes. But, Craig Tutt would be big, because that would be 2 years in a row you get a kid from Oakland who's your perennial state power in 6A. I think that would be a big one in the state of Tennessee. There's some kids out in West Tennessee too that Tennessee is evaluating, and we'll see how they continue to monitor and come along. But 26 is a really good solid group. I think they're off to a great start with Tyreek King and Carson Snead, two dudes that just have the right mental makeup and can make plays at a high level.
Give me one of these for Zach Groves.
Thumbs up. You definitely want Zach Groves.
Joel Wyatt.
Yes, you want Joel Wyatt. The question is, what does he play? Right, like that. That's the biggest question. About him. Like, is he a safety? Does he grow into a linebacker? In the 90s, you would have said he grows into a linebacker. I'm not sure what does he play. I know he plays receiver, but I think, a lot of teams have started to like him more on the defensive side of the ball.
All right, we'll move on to Tien Vaugh. How much contact do Heupel and company have with the 2016 guys? And do they feel like they can come around much? I hope Juwan Jennings, Joshua Dobbs, Alvin Kamara, Sutton, Barnett are all welcome back to the program.
Yeah, they're all come around all the time, Hubbard. I mean, they were at the Orange and White game.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara in the post-game press conference, just being the little,
fine wall through the curtain situation.
I'm not sure why it's just specified the 2016 team. Like, it's like, what about the 2013 team? What about the 2006 team? I mean, every guy's welcome back. They're all loved up.
And I think Heupel gets that stuff at a high level too, as a former player himself.
Yes,
maybe more so than some others.
You're saying you don't have to call ahead and get on the pass list to come in, Rob?
I wasn't really specifically referencing that, but also don't think he's threatened by a former player coming in and maybe talking to his team, and he didn't know exactly everything that's being said.
Who are you talking about, Rob?
Mutes his mic. All right. Big Orange Crush, how many offensive linemen do we bring in through the portal? I'm guessing at least two, maybe three.
Again, as we sit here and tape this on Wednesday, get David Sanders in. I don't think Tennessee will bring in a tackle, but I absolutely could see them bringing in at least two interior guys, depending on who they could get. But again, at some point, you've got to push some guys that you've signed and develop them into these roles.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question I have is, what do they really think of guys that they currently have in the room? Not what they publicly say. I'm not interested in.
There you go.
I'm not interested in the public comment, but what are they behind closed doors? What do they really think they are with some of these guys in the program? Do they think they're contributors? Do they think they're still a year away? Do they think they can be there in 3 months? That's the unknown for me about what that is. And I think the portal will answer that question for us by how many guys they take in the portal at that offensive line position. I would think maybe two inside guys. I don't think you would go more than two. If you go more than two, that tells you a lot about what you think about the guys that you currently have and where you think they are in terms of being available and ready to help you right now.
All right, we'll go to Caden here. He says, I sound like a broken record, but am I wrong thinking we will at least be in the top five spenders in the portal this year? We have so many holes to fill, and if everything goes according to plan, this will be Nico's final season.
First of all, I don't know what top five spender means.
Nobody will ever know.
Nobody's going to know what that is because there's no transparency. There's going to be all kinds of rumors out there. Here's my question, and you guys jump in here. Eric, everybody jump in here. What do we think? What do we think about the holes that they have to fill? I mean, how many holes does this team have to fill this offseason? I mean, I like them at star and corner, assuming all those guys are back, right? Boo, Jamon McCoy, Ricky Gibson. I mean, that's as solid as they've been there. I like where they are at linebacker, Austin. That means Spielman's got to come on, I think, but I don't dislike their depth with what they're bringing in his class at linebacker. They're not void of talent on the defensive line. Are they as deep as they are right now? No, they're not. So maybe you go there, but it's not like they have a glaring hole on the defensive line.
Don't you think they're getting to the point now? Maybe not everywhere. I mean, the point you were making about the offensive line, I think, is really good. I mean, you'd like to really know what they think, but tennis, I mean, everybody's always going to take a star edge guy if they can get one. An impact. Everybody will always take, a big play wide receiver if they can get one. But don't you think Tennessee's kind of there where they're, shopping in the luxury aisle now instead of you know, having to get the staples, you know, having to get bread and milk and eggs, like, you know, for the roster like they were the past couple of years?
Yes, but I also would tell you that, like, they are – I don't think they're ones that are going to just go and go, okay, this is the can't-miss guy. We have to go get him. Like, you didn't see them, like, dying to try to go get Juice Wells a year ago or some of those other guys that were thought to be high-ticket items. Like, I think that ultimately they value how do they fit into the program. They're going to do a deep dive into where they've been, what kind of kid they are, what can they find out about, you know, what that kid's been like at the previous school, and then go from there. I'm not saying they won't spend, because that we've seen Lance Hurd, they'll spend. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, the fit more so than, you know, hey, I just got to have this shiny toy to get the shiny toy. So I agree. Like, they are shopping in certain spots, you know, at a different level than they were a few years ago. But I think ultimately Heupel and them value fit more than they do anything else.
Well, and also, I mean, we just got a huge – that's not a panacea. I mean, allegedly Ohio State spent more than anybody. And, you know,
look at the team.
Ole Miss. Florida State. I mean, it's not a cure-all.
Yeah, two of those teams – one team went 2-10. The other is not going to make the playoff, no matter how much Lane complains. And the other one didn't make the Big Ten championship game, and they will make the playoff, but, you know – they just
lost. Nobody happy.
Nobody happy. Miserable. Correct. Yeah. I mean, so.
Yeah. And again,
like, I feel like the Redskins spent all that money that year to go get Bruce, you know, and all those players, and then it came up with nothing.
Yeah. And again, I just don't think, I think, Rob, you're right. You're always going to take a rush end. You're always going to take a mature defensive interior lineman. Okay. I mean, I think those are a given, but I just don't feel like this roster right now. And maybe it's because I saw the holes they had in year one, you know, and where they were. I just don't feel like this roster is that depleted to where they've got to go get 8, 10, 12 guys to fill all these holes that they have. I just don't think there's that many holes right now.
I couldn't agree more. I think on the offensive line, you're losing a lot of starters. But, I mean, yeah, that's the only, like, position group that I can think of. You feel good about where you are at tight end. I know you're losing Miles Kitzelman, but you're bringing in two guys that you like, and then – you lose a couple of receivers, but to be completely frank, I mean, your last two big transfer portal gets at wide receiver haven't turned out immediately the way you thought they were going to be, right? So, yeah, I just think there's a lot of holes to fill in the offensive line more than anything. Athrum wants to know, he's got a couple of things. As this is recorded on Wednesday, how do you feel about the way signing day has shaped up for Tennessee? Austin, I know you and Matt kind of went over that a little bit in the two-minute drill.
I mean, I think it's went fine. You know, I mean, what have you seen in this particular, you know, signing class? You've seen a bunch of flips, and we saw some last year. Tennessee wasn't affected as much. But, you know, what you've seen here is, you know, Tennessee's gotten their fair share of, you know, flips themselves. They flipped Jaden Harmon from Alabama. They flipped DeJuan Morris, you know, from USC. Jaden Perlotti from USC. They flipped – you know, Brendan Ains from Wisconsin. That's right. At some point, you know, even though it was kind of, you know, Brame counts, but like Brame really wanted to be here from the jump. And, you know, but yes, they flipped him from Oregon. You know, so Tennessee's had their fair share of flips as well. And let's face it, Isaiah Campbell, you know, decommitted and then took some visits. But in a way, they kind of flipped him from Clemson because they continued to work him and continued to work him to the point where he wanted to take visits, even though Clemson doesn't really allow that. So he was willing to decommit from Clemson and come visit Tennessee and North Carolina and then eventually pick the Vols. So, yeah, they lost Shady Hayward. That's a blow. I mean, Tennessee did not want to lose Shady Hayward. They lost Onus, or at least to this point, you know, because he's not signing, you know, in February. You know, will they double back around here and be able to keep him in the class? We'll see. You know, but, you know, I think what you're seeing here is Tennessee, you know, has been able to get some. They've lost some. And that's maybe a little bit more consternation in the recruiting process that we have seen over the last probably 5 or 10 years, because for the last, you know, at least last 5 or 6, just Tennessee hadn't had that many flips, 2 or 4, against you. And so I think this year is just a little bit of a different animal.
I wonder, and I know he's got more questions to get to. I do wonder this, though. We've seen a lot of flips around the country. I mean, a lot. It feels like we've seen more this year of high-profile guys flipping late than we've seen. Does the push for an earlier signing date surface back around? Does it come back around for that September 1 signing day to where you don't have to deal with all that you're dealing with in the fall right now? Or do coaches like the fact that they could flip guys? Yeah, they got to hold on to their guys, but they have the opportunity to flip guys because most of these guys are committing in June and not signing until 5 months later. I think that topic is going to surface again, don't you, AP?
Yeah, I mean, it probably does. The question, it's kind of like the one-time transfer with the TBSAA, though. Like, for 2 years, we've heard it's going to happen. We're sitting here, you know, on December 5th, and it still hasn't happened. And that's right. Not to say it won't happen next week, but, like, sometimes it just takes a while to get to that point.
What are your thoughts on Jamie Chadwell? I know Austin's mentioned him as a guy Danny White might look into if there's ever anything going on here. It seems like UCF is going to try to get him to be their next head coach.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love Jamie Chadwell. I think he does a great job. He had that head-scratching loss to Kennesaw State earlier this year. But he's done a fantastic job at Coastal. He's done a fantastic job at Liberty. And he took Liberty, you know, with former Vol quarterback Caden Salter to the Fiesta Bowl last year. Now they got trounced, but it doesn't matter. I mean, they still went to the Fiesta Bowl.
Was he really former Vol quarterback, though?
No. Well, yeah, but yeah, because, I mean,
he was on campus.
He was on campus for a semester. He was on the team for maybe 2 months.
He had a jersey.
He had a locker. He's still got a bunch of Tennessee gear.
I guarantee he's got Tennessee gear.
He's looking for a new home now, too, yeah.
He's a VFL.
He got bowl swag, didn't he, when he was early enrollee?
He's a VFL.
He was an early enrollee.
He's got all kinds of bowl swag.
Of course, there were no bowls that year, though, right?
Oh.
There was no bowls the year he came in, I don't think.
But, you know, but the point is I think he does a really nice job, and I think UCF would be a good job for him, to eventually, you know, bounce somewhere bigger.
I mean, this is off topic, but Malzahn, what are y'all's thoughts on Malzahn?
I think that nobody wants to deal with. I mean, like at that level, you're either taking somebody's you know problems or you're getting your best players poached, and I think, you know. I just think he didn't. Look at Caden Salter's leaving Liberty, you know, and he almost left a year ago, but something arose that he couldn't leave. So, I mean, like, I think that anytime you're at that level, your best players are always going to kind of get, cleaned out year to year, and you have to constantly replace.
I think the Central Florida level, Rob, and talk about Gus leaving Central Florida to go be an assistant, which is an unusual thing to see happen. I think the Central Florida job has gotten a lot harder because they're playing in the Big 12. So your competition is different. I know the Big 12 is not dominant, but it's better. I think you're better week in, week out competition than you are in Conference USA. You're playing a bunch of teams out in the Midwest. So now it's recruiting's a little bit harder, right? Because you've got to deal with a bunch of Florida kids is who you want, but you're playing Colorado and Arizona State and all this other stuff out there. And I think those kids, you know, if they're good enough, they don't come there. And then if they get there and they are good enough, then they look to go to Florida or Miami or Florida State. I don't know. Can UCF have $22 million for rev share, you know, with where they are? They're a pretty young program and with a young fan base. So I think that job with the changing landscape of conferences, rev share and everything else, I think that job's gotten harder. And I just think Gus Malzahn's like, you know what? Auburn's still paying me a crap ton of money. I'll go call some plays for somebody else, go home at night and sleep.
I think that's a really good point. I think it has a lot to do where you are in your career. Like if you're young and hungry, like Alex Golish, you probably look at that a lot differently than what you're just talking about when Gus Malzahn goes and takes $20 out of his ATM account and says, "Well, remaining balance is $52 million. What am I doing this for?"
I'm still trying to figure out why Gus is coaching. Period.
That's my thing. Why are you still coaching?
Exactly.
Why?
Why is Jimbo trying to get the West Virginia job?
Yeah,
I mean, that boggles my mind.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
We'll go to Volunteer at 87. Is there any way to avoid what happened with our two DB commits in Florida? I guess he's referencing Hayward and Onis. Onis, of course, at the time of this recording, does it look like he's going to sign in this period? And then Shady Hayward, all the momentum toward Florida. Austin, how would you answer that?
He's wanting to know, is there anything we can do? I guess to
hold on to guys, not to have the 11th hour flip, stuff like
no,
that.
No, listen.
It's always happened.
Yeah, it's always happened. You go back to the Stone Mountain boys when they flipped to LSU. I mean, like that just happens. And like, you know, Shady, it's not like Shady came back and said, "Hey, if you'll come up, you know, in price, I really want to be at Tennessee." He never gave Tennessee a chance. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. Like, you know, you're going to lose guys and you're going to get guys. And that's why I said, you know, kind of like the portal giveth and the portal taketh away. Same thing with recruiting and NIL. And so, again, it's why I said everybody on your team, everyone from Nico on down is eligible to transfer after every season. And so, and that's not to say Nico's transferring, so don't miss mistake. I'm just saying from the top level to the bottom level, people can transfer. And, you know, that can happen. And so that's why you just you cheer for a particular team year in, year out, and you focus on Tennessee football. Don't worry about individual players because they can come and go. And so don't get attached to guys. Just kind of focus on the guys that are on your own team. And I know I'm getting a little bit on my soapbox here, but I mean, that's just kind of where this thing's at right now with the new world. And the fact is all these agents, and everyone has one, they're always trying to leverage to get more money for their client because they get more money as agents. Well, so,
remember this too. I mean, the windows open, the window opens Monday, but you can go into, you can transfer 365 days out of the year.
That's right. I mean,
you can put on social media on July the 10th, I'm going in the portal when it opens in December, if you want to. Right. The same way you can come in week four and say, hey, coach, I need more money. If you don't give me more money in December, I'm gone.
Yep.
You know, or hey, I'm playing more than I wanted, than I thought I was going to get to play. Or hey, you need me more than you thought, so you got to pay me more. Or hey, you're not playing me at all, I'm out of here. And those are conversations that happen basically every day at football programs around the country, 365 days out of the year. That's not a, when I get to the end of the season, I'll evaluate where I think I am. That evaluation is taking place every day for every kid out there. They're evaluating it every day.
Yep. They're right. They are. And I don't think the fans truly realize how much, you know, like everybody goes, I had somebody tell me the other day, like, well, it's the NFL now. No, it's not. Because if you have a 5-year deal in the NFL, you're not renegotiating every 5 minutes. And that's the problem. Even if a kid signs a 2 or 3 year deal, he wants to renegotiate and they say they need to renegotiate because guess what? The NCAA had no ability to get out ahead of this, even though they could have. They chose not to. They chose to stick their head in the sands. There's no guardrails on this thing. And so you can kind of come and go as you please. You can transfer many times as you want to, and there's no penalty. And you can just keep asking for more and more and more and more, and it's one big game of chicken. Do you have a chance to leave? Yes, you do.
Yeah, I mean, do we think, Rob, somebody will come to a coach, not necessarily at Tennessee, but around the country, middle of spring practice, and go, Coach, I mean, I practice 8 days with this team. Man, you got to have me a lot more than I thought you did. I'm going to have some more money, or I'm going to leave here. I'm going to leave here the last week of spring practice.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, never forget, I mean, we're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old young men. I mean, never, ever, ever forget that.
Mamas and daddies.
And everybody, you know, remember some of the decisions and that you made at that age. I mean, that's a big part of all this. I mean,
it is.
All right, we got plenty more questions to get into, but first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Attention boat owners and lake enthusiasts, the Norris Lake Boat Store is your one-stop destination for everything your boat needs year-round. From expert winterization to secure boat storage, top-tier cosmetic repairs, reliable preventative maintenance, you name it, they can all do it. You can get online, visit their store or in person, or get online at norrislakeboatstore.com. And you can also give them a call at 865-256-9839.
All right, we'll jump back into the questions here on the mailbag edition of the VolQuest podcast. We'll go to Dalval 5. What's with the Dylan Sampson early fumble thing, Rob? He's going to be an All-American. He's the best player in the SEC, but he's fumbled it 4 times, some impromptu times in the first quarter this year.
I mean, I got no answer for it, and especially a guy, I mean, you want to talk about somebody that's conscientious about it. I mean, this is somebody that cares and works at it. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's fundamentally unsound. I mean, when it happens so many times, you can't really say that four of them are a fluke. But I don't know. I mean, for a guy that's as accomplished as he is, it's pretty unusual.
It's bizarre, Brett. I want to say, was it the Georgia game or it was the Kentucky game? Johnson Dumas, that linebacker, he played at Georgia. He went down and protected the football, and he just smacked it out. I mean, sometimes fumbles happen, but yeah, I mean, as Rob pointed out, he's very conscientious. I mean, he's not lazy with the football.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say, and I think you heard Darrell Sims say this, I mean, sometimes you got to give up on a play. You know, like sometimes you're not going to spin out of, you know, four people with their arms on you and ripping at the football. Sometimes you just got to, hey, I got six and six is all I can get. I don't think that's why he has all those fumbles. But I think sometimes he opens himself up for that because he's trying to, you know, fight for a little bit more, a little, you know, that type of thing. I think that's something you have to be conscious of. I can promise you this, on every NFL scouting sheet for Dylan Sampson, ball security is now on that with a question mark is now on his sheet. And I think that's unfair because he's been really good with the ball, but you don't fumble it four times the back half of the season and that not show up in your scouting report.
Another one here. Why does it feel like the loss at Arkansas is the only bad loss in the country this year? It feels like it holds Tennessee up big time, but nobody talks about the Notre Dame loss, the Ole Miss loss, and all the other losses in the college football playoff conversation.
Yeah, again, because the committee's a joke. You know, they pick and choose, you know, what their narrative is week to week. Listen, we all have, you know, local bias because we're covering Tennessee. So, you know, we're able to see the warts here. We're able to still see the warts at other places. When you have the national media starting to point out, like, the number of spots that, you know, Ohio State fell compared to Miami. Now, I think that's a bit flawed, too, because, again, Miami, you know, got away by the skin of their teeth with how many wins this year, and they don't have any real quality wins. So it's not, I mean, you can make a case against Miami, just like you can make a case for Miami. But like, you're right. I think it's a bit, you know, a bit of a joke that they talked about that, but they didn't talk about Ole Miss's loss to a 4-8 Kentucky team. You know, they don't talk about, you know, that Michigan, you know, was a prop, you know, win for Indiana, you know, just a few weeks ago. And now, you know, that's the same Michigan team that, you know, struggled most of the year, but did find a way with a walk-on to beat, you know, Ohio State, a team that has a bajillion dollars poured into it.
That's hilarious. I mean, like Michigan, it's a humiliating loss for Ohio State, yet, you know, that's a great win for Indiana. how can both of those things be true?
All right, this one's from Doolittle Vol. Now that most of the schools who plan on making a move have fired their coach, has anything that has happened or not happened with the coaching carousel been a surprise to you? And has there been any chatter on Tim Banks getting attention anywhere else? That's a good question, but I do want to start off with, is anybody surprised, like, the no SEC coach going to get fired this year? Like, Sam Pittman's been retained, Napier saved his job, Clark Lee obviously saved his job. Like, I would have lost that bet entering the season.
Well, I think a lot of people had Beamer on that hot seat entering the season, and that dude just went out and went 9-3.
Now Ohio State wants him.
I mean, I think a couple things. One, I'm not saying guys are going to get longer leashes, but I do think you have to look at that for a couple of reasons. One, how much it costs you to make a coaching change now, what that means with your current roster in terms of everybody fleeting, and what it means to a recruiting class. I mean, what is it? North Carolina signed like five people on signing day. I mean, they got a class of five, and they're probably going to have another 15 or so go into the portal, maybe 20 go into the portal. I mean, timing-wise, there's nothing good about making a coaching change in November, early December in college football. So does that make you hesitant to make a change, or do we change the cycle of firing coaches and moving into January after you've already got, you know, your commitments in there and after you've signed and you close the transfer portal window? Because – I think if you get rid of a coach the week of Thanksgiving, the week before, man, it eliminates it. I mean, just eliminates the class, and you're going to have a hard time putting 65, 70 guys on the field.
I mean, not only does it eliminate a class, it pretty much punts the next season almost. Yeah. I mean, I think you're going to look like I think the exception is going to be what Josh did here in 2021, and I don't know if he could repeat that, you know, with the way the transfers and NIL is now, but I think you're going to look like Mississippi State this year. I mean, and that's not a criticism. I think that's Well, and I think that's going to be the norm.
I think Mississippi State had 50 new players on their team.
I mean, so, I think that's going to be the new normal if you fire your coach.
Yeah, and you better. I'll say this too: if you're going to fire your coach, if you're in a coaching search and you don't have a coach in place by Monday morning when the portal window opens, then you're really putting yourself behind the eight ball, because you need to have a staff in place and you need to have a plan in place that you can go and attack that portal window when it opens up first thing, because all those guys ain't sitting around waiting to January and see who all comes after them. They're going to take whatever the best option is early out of the gate. So if I've got a coaching search going on right now, I want to introduce somebody Sunday afternoon and let them go to work on the portal Monday morning.
All right, we'll move on. Question about home playoff games. If they're, it's Tennessee, an outside chance of having a home playoff game, but just in general, will they look more like true road games, like running through the tee, third down for what, all that, or NCAA baseball, softball regionals where they try to minimize the in-stadium home advantage?
This is not an NCAA event. They don't own the college football playoff. This will be a road game. The whole intent of it is to be a road game.
Though I am told there are certain things that the home teams would not be able to do. I don't know exactly what those are. I'm
just
going to
say, like,
you,
what are those things?
I don't know. I was just told that there's a several-page document. There are certain things that homeschools will not be allowed to do in the CFP. I don't know. Again, I don't know what that is. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just explaining to you what I was told yesterday was that there is a document of certain things that they can't do. I mean, like, I don't think it would prevent Tennessee from, like, passing out 100,000 shakers or Penn State
or running through the
tee or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, there are certain things that, you know, you won't be able to do it for whatever reason.
Jeff Jarning can still do it.
It's still going to be.
I would say maybe like bring people out during TV timeouts in the end zone and recognize, like, you know, the track team.
I can see that. Like, you can't have Peyton Manning down on the field before the game waving at everybody, you know, like in a call out moment. Something like that.
I mean, I think the intent is it for it to be a true road game.
Which it will be off the number of fans.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the intent of it is to be somewhat of a neutral site game or anything like that. I mean,
that's right.
I mean, I mean, are there real restrictions for baseball and super regionals and regular regional play? I mean, did that not feel like a home game when Tennessee was playing somebody in a super regional?
The only thing in those is you're playing at your home stadium and you're the away team. That's stupid.
There you go.
That's dumb. That's a whole different set of deals.
Unless they make Tennessee the home team, wherever they're at, they get to wear orange.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, can we go back to get to the guys, the second part of the previous question about Tim Banks? Because I think he's more interested probably in Tim Banks than my soapbox about coaching change timing and all that. I think with Tim, it's going to be what job would Tim want to really go after? Okay, in this day and age versus what you could make to be a defensive coordinator. And then I think the other thing with Tim is who gets a job at the Power Four level that he has a relationship with that might have interest in him being their defensive coordinator, and would he entertain that? We'll see. I don't see a bunch of lower level jobs, I guess, quote, entry level jobs, if you will, right now that seems very appealing to me. But we'll see if anything comes out of that. I mean, I think Tim Banks is going to entertain. I mean, he's on a contract that expires in January. I think he's going to entertain everything out there. Tennessee's trying to keep him. They want to keep him. But I think he is going to be open to whatever is out there. I just don't know that there's anything out there extremely appealing right now for Tim Banks.
Saudi Daisy Vol says, do you guys see any Tennessee players jumping in the portal before the playoffs start? Or do those players stick it out until after the season? We've already seen a couple of guys announce their intentions of entering the portal, Bison Lang earlier this week, Khalifa Keith. Expect that to still be a thing leading on into the playoffs, guys?
Yeah,
I think so. I don't think you're going to see a starter necessarily go into the portal, you know, a major contributor go into that. But, I mean, I think you're going to continue to see movement, AP.
Yeah, correct. And remember this, like, let's say Tennessee wins their first-round game, then they go to whatever bowl game that is on, like, the first. If Tennessee lost that game, then everybody on Tennessee's team would have up to 5 days after the completion of that game to go into the portal. So, like, again, I think it behooves you to win, because then it makes that window to get in much tighter for any players that are on the fence or not on the fence.
ATL VFL wants to know, do you still think there is an NIL threshold for when it makes more sense to invest in a portal player than high school? And are we figuring out which positions just aren't worth top dollar to a high school player, such as safety?
You know, I think it just all depends. I mean, like, you know, Tennessee's not going to pay, you know, a running back $1 million, right? Whereas, like, you know, if you listen to everybody that works the NIL game, Ohio State was willing to do that with, you know, Judkins and, you know, Travion Henderson. So, I mean, they've got a ton of money tied up in two backs, you know, whereas Tennessee just doesn't work that way. They view it more like the NFL model, like quarterbacks, guys that can sack the quarterback, and guys that can protect the quarterback, and then it trickles down from there. So, like, you know, again, but each position, each player, depending on your need, you may just need a safety hubs, and you may have to go out and pay a little more for that safety than you normally would, but you got to have them.
Yeah, I mean, every situation's different. I mean, you said it best. I mean, what's somebody's value? Somebody's value is what somebody's willing to pay them. And depending on how desperate you are for somebody at some position, you might overpay. I still think the question is going to get back to who is going to be the person that steps in and tells a head coach and a coaching staff, no, we're not doing that. We're not paying them that much money. It's not going to happen. Go find somebody else at a cheap. Go get somebody at a better value. We're not going that route. When do we really get to that point? Because I still think coaches are in the mode of, we got to have them, go get them, raise the money, find the money, whatever it takes. When do you get to the point where you go, nope, too hot, too expensive for us, we're not doing that one. We're going in a different direction here because we value this position lower than they value their that position going after that player. When does that come into vogue? And who is the person that steps in and tells a coach that?
Let's go to Vol from Bama. How does Hype and Co. fix the on-field discipline penalty issues before next season? Rob,
did we get this question last year?
I mean, you get it every week. I mean, and people like, will somebody please ask Coach Hype? Hype gets asked about it all the time. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it's happened. I mean, it's not just Hubbard. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was a problem at UCF too, right?
Yeah, they've been a heavily penalized team ever since where he's been a head coach. And some of it's just boneheaded plays. I mean,
I think the poster, I erased half the question. But like the offsides, like what in the world? Why are they lining up offsides? Like that stuff is so correctable, right?
I don't have any idea. Yeah. I wish I had an answer.
And I will
say they average three a game.
And I will say the guy that most people would and fans certainly would say that is the best assistant coach on the team, Rodney Garner's guys had the same problem. I mean, Caleb Heron had 3-1 game, didn't he?
Yep.
Just lying straight up offsides.
In like probably 8 or 9 snaps. Like it's incredible. It was announced on Saturday that Andrew Luck is going to return to Stanford and be the GM of the football program. Do you think we start seeing more official moves going that way in college football? And if so, what type of people should be candidates for those jobs?
I don't know. We'll see. I guess, is Josh Dobbs going to return and be the, you know, whatever, because Andrew Luck is. I just think everything's different. You might see that in some schools and some schools not.
Again, what's Andrew Luck's power level at Stanford? Is he walking into the office? What I was talking about in the last question about NIL and the threshold. Is he walking into the office with the coach at Stanford and saying, okay, here's our budget for each position group. Okay, we paid this guy X amount last year. He didn't play X enough snaps. You got to run him off. We're cutting him. We're putting him on the waiver wires because you're not playing him. We got to have the money back on that cap. Does he have that kind of authority and that kind of coach? Here's your roster. I put your roster together for you. You go coach it. That's not a world of college football. That's never been the world of college football. I mean, do we really think it's going to transition into that to where all these coaches are going to surrender their power to a GM who's going to hand them a group of players to go develop and coach, and you figure out how to keep them happy, coach, because they're your responsibility for the next year, and then we'll give you the next year's list, you know, come February and see what that deal is. I think that's the question of what is a true GM in college sports.
And in a power dynamic where the head coach is already making, in most cases, 4 or 5 more times than his theoretical boss.
Volman98 wants to know if all 5 of the starting defensive backs will be back next year. No, Will Brooks is out of eligibility, but everybody else, I mean, you know, things can happen, of course, but, you know, McCoy's an underclassman, Gibson an underclassman, Carter an underclassman, Turrentine's got another year, Thomas, Jordan Thomas.
Again, they're all eligible to also leave. Yeah. Again, I'm just going to beat that drum. Like, don't tie yourselves to the players. I don't know that anybody's leaving, but I can promise you, people in the back channel, I've seen Boo Carter this year and said, oh, got to have Boo Carter. Seen Jermon McCoy. Hey, he's from Texas. Let's try to get him to come home. Like, you know, call his high school coach. See if we can get involved. Like, that stuff is going on everywhere at every school. It's not a Tennessee thing. It's at everything.
Nashville 615's got a couple. Why do you think there's been more decommitment drama this year compared to the last 2 to 3 years? You guys spoke on this a moment ago. Not necessarily just Tennessee, but just in general in college football.
Well, I mean, I think you've had, I mean, in certain cases you've had, because guys have been committed and people have looked for somebody over the last 4 months, have had a time to get an NIL package together and kind of swoop in late and, you know, wine and dine somebody. And I mean, what's fascinating to me, and this is why I asked the question earlier about an earlier signing date, and I'm with you, AP. I don't think it's coming on the horizon. But look at the number.
You guys are talking about it to make it happen, right? Like, well, you have to start talking about it a lot for it to happen. Right.
And I don't know if it should happen or not, but if I'm a coach and I'm sitting here and I've had multiple players committed for 250, 300 days, and we couldn't get to the finish line with them, that's too long to be trying to hold on to a commit, you know, or even go back to just in the June time, you know, of a couple of hundred days. That's a long time to hold on to people. And does that narrative start to take shape? I don't know, but we've seen more people who have been committed for months upon months decommit, high profile guys decommit this year than I can remember in a long, long time, maybe ever.
I'm in favor of 9 SEC conference games, but understand that's probably not likely. However, with all the talent, here's the question I was talking about, with all the talent fees, NIL, all that's being asked of the fans and donors at some point, is there going to be pushback? A season ticket holder with UTC, Kent State, UTEP games are tough to watch when only more is being asked of us every year.
Okay, if that's going to be the case, then don't hold your coach accountable that he has to be in the playoffs all the time.
100%.
If you're going to put that on there because you want the entertainment value in September to be higher, then the coach should have a longer leash if he doesn't make the playoffs on a regular basis. Now, if you schedule light and you schedule bad home games, then you better have your coach better get you to the playoffs on a regular basis. I think that's the yin and the yang of it for me.
I agree.
Last one's going to go to Wiseball24. Has Mike Matthews played the last few weeks, gained the coach's trust in him so he can get more playing time? The kid looks to have the it factor.
Yes, I think so. I do think that, you know, his ability to do the little things early maybe hampered him. He's doing the little things now. It's kind of like Boo Carter. When you do the little things on and off the field the right way, you start to see more and more playing time. Same thing with Mike. I don't think he was doing anything bad, but, I mean, I just think, like, little things like, you know, blocking down the field, holding your block, you know, little stuff like that were reasons why it was kind of holding him back. He started to figure that out a little bit more, so you started to play more.
And you got more confidence for him because you had to throw him on the field at Vanderbilt, and he performed well in a situation where he was playing a lot of snaps. It wasn't, Rob, hey, let's try to rotate him in and get him a series here or there. It's, hey, we're down two outside receivers. He's the next man up. Mike, you got to play the whole entire second half. You know, and I think when you do that and you do it well enough, then you further gain people's trust as opposed to, hey, let's try to get him a half dozen snaps, or let's try to get him 20 snaps in this game and rotate him in. They didn't have a choice on Saturday, and he answered the call.
Well, and at that position, you better earn the trust of your quarterback too. And it's pretty odd. I mean, Nico wasn't shy about going to him. I mean, I don't care. I mean, you guys know this. I mean, you can be best friends and everything off the field and hang out every night, but that quarterback ain't going your way if he doesn't trust you to be where you're going to be, because if he doesn't think, you know, worried about you making you look bad. And it was pretty obvious that Nico had trust in him, you know, in a big, big spot.
Yeah, Mike Matthews wasn't running the wrong way. So he did a really, really good job. And ultimately, he's a guy that fans want to see. He's a guy that probably should have been getting a little bit more run throughout the season. But I think he did a good job on Saturday. Played a season high 42 snaps, I believe. And, of course, had a touchdown reception. I appreciate you guys, as always, for sending in your questions to the mailbag portion of the show presented by our friends over at Exterior Home Solution, local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for garage, roofing, siding, whatever the case may be, you can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. That phone number is at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I'm Eric Kane. A lot going on at the website right now. We got hoops, recruiting talk, college football playoff conversations. Come join us, hang out with us on the General's Quarters. All that and more at VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.